Welcome. You are listening to The Creative Spark. My name is G. Brian Benson, and I'm an award-winning author, project coach, actor, TEDx speaker, creative, and four-time Ironman triathlete. I love to creatively inspire and be inspired. And with each episode, I will be talking of authors, athletes, entrepreneurs, artists, and actors sharing their journey of success and learning how to find the joy and peace of mind that comes with stepping into one's own skin and going beyond anything they might previously have thought possible. I hope that their stories and strategies provide insight, tools, and empowerment to step up your creative game and help you live your best life. So without further ado, let's get going. Artist Tanmaya Bingham's drawings and paintings are a direct reflection of her fascination with the human condition and have been exhibiting both nationally and internationally in places such as Santa Fe, New York City, Sydney, Hong Kong, and Berlin, and they have been featured in publications such as High Fructose and Vogue. Born in Washington, D.C., she was raised in the artistic community of Santa Fe, New Mexico. Her travels and extended residencies in Asia, Africa, Australia, and Europe have been essential to the development of her creative style. She has also studied painting and art history in Florence, art and architecture in Paris, and 3D digital modeling and sculpting in London and Vancouver, BC. Academically, Tanmaya has a Bachelor of Arts from Antioch University, Santa Barbara, California, and a Master of Fine Arts from the Australian National University, Canberra. Collectively, her extensive arts education and industry experience have provided her with a deep understanding of what it means to be an artist in the 21st century. My gosh, what a bio. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
We really are just scratching the surface. We haven't talked about any of your awards or anything like that, which we will, but you're quite the traveler too.
Yeah, I've lived and worked and exhibited all over. So yeah.
Wow. Well, before we kind of just start diving into how you became an artist and kind of what inspired you to get your start, let's briefly talk about the medium that you use so our listeners can get a better idea of your artwork as we dive into talking about it.
For sure. So I primarily work in colored pencil and acrylic and some mixed media materials like glitter, which I love. And for me, that, you know, coming to that place was actually because when I was doing my master's in painting and oil painting, I got toxic shock and I got really, really sick. And so it had me reflect on how is it that I can get the same kind of outcome that you would get, let's say with, you know, oil painting or acrylic, but with colored pencil as the primary medium. And it had me really experimenting for a few years post my master's, trying to figure out how to do things in a more, you know, healthy way. And that's how I landed on working in colored pencil, which, you know, honestly, drawing's always been my favorite modality to work in. So it just felt like coming home. I don't consider myself as much of a painter as I do a drawer. And I don't even know if you say drawer or, yeah, I'm not really sure.
No, you're asking the wrong guy. I don't know.
Renderer. Yeah. So
renderer of pencils.
Yeah.
Colored pencil.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Thank you. No, that's very interesting. I mean, cause you know, there's so many different forms of art out there, and it's always interesting to talk to people, how they kind of got into their, you know, their style or how those style kind of evolved or just kind of happened. Right. You know, some people probably have an idea of what they want to work with, but I mean, others it's a process, I'm sure, until it, wow, this is it for me.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's ever evolving. I don't see myself as like locked in. It's just that I really still enjoy it. So I still continue to do it. And, you know, from a price point perspective, works on paper just never sell as much. And I work on panels, so it looks like a painting. And so I'm able to basically fetch similar prices that you would get for a painting instead of a drawing. So that was also my idea around going down that road. Because I was like, I don't want to be like shooting myself in the foot and trying to like, and then take a price cut, you know, basically. So.
No, that's really, really interesting. And I never thought about it. I mean, yeah, why is it that pencil art, or, you know what I mean, is not thought of as, I mean, it's thought of as art, but like not as maybe valuable as something that's on a canvas, or explain what a panel is too, because I'm an art newbie.
So, I mean, it's just a piece of wood that you paint on, essentially. That's okay. Probably the dumbest way of saying it. Like, you know, it's nothing really fancy. It's just a hard surface that looks like, you know, a three-dimensional canvas would. Obviously canvases have, you know, some depth to them. So similar to that. Okay. Yeah. And I don't really, you know, I've worked in art management for so long too. And it's just something I found throughout the gallery world. Yeah. Works on paper, people just don't take as seriously. Also archivally and stuff, they're much harder to take care of. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. No, that's great. That's interesting. When did you know when you wanted to be an artist and make that your life, your way of, you know, providing for yourself?
So when I was 7, as cliche as that sounds, I literally told my parents this is what I was going to do. And then I caveated, I said, well, if I have to, I'll teach a little, but no, I'm just going to be an artist. And yeah, and then everything from that point on, I was incredibly driven. I literally, no matter what I did, I mean, even studying, for example, coaching and NLP, I did because I wanted to be able to have interviewing skills to talk to potential models that I could then, you know, integrate back into my work. So, and even like I did yoga training at one point and nutrition, and all of those things were just because I wanted to be a machine, because I know like how much I have to produce on a regular basis and the quality level that I want to, you know, obtain with that. And so having the ability to just like take care of my body and mind in a really healthy way was incredibly important to me on that journey too.
I think that's fascinating because, you know, there's this romantic version of artists in the past and stuff that were, you know, drank too much or, you know what I mean? Just kind of just did all kinds of things that you would think that would really make it even harder to produce amazing work. I guess some people maybe come at it from a different way, but I love how you intuitively kind of knew your direction, number one, and then number two, just to get yourself ready to, like you say, to make yourself a machine. I mean, that's just fascinating. Because I don't think there's probably very many artists that are like that, correct? Or
I don't know. I mean, I've met some that have similar sort of ways of working and others that definitely don't. And I think, you know, people who fall into more of like addictions or things like that help. I think they see it as they make an association between that and their work, that they need to be in an altered state to be able to create the best. Whereas for me, I want to be as present as possible. And so that means like, I want to have enough sleep. I'm not going to work until 2 a.m. in the morning. I'm very much more like, look at it as like the long-term plan. Like, how can I sustainably do this over the long haul?
So it's almost like a 9-to-5.
Yeah. Yeah. When I don't have an actual 9-to-5 too.
Yeah.
I mean, on my days off, like, yeah, I am in my studio for sure.
That's really awesome. Did growing up in Santa Fe and being exposed to all that art there in the art community, did that have an influence on you and you know what I mean? Or maybe plant that seed of you wanting to do what you did when you said you were 7?
Right. I think a few things. So definitely we moved there when I was about that age. And the community there is, you know, they have, or at least they used to have, the most galleries per capita in the world. And so can't say all of those are like quality galleries, but they have a lot of art, right?
Sure.
And for me, being in that environment was incredibly inspiring, but I was really embedded into it because my father was in-house counsel for one of the largest galleries in the West. Mm. And so he was an art lawyer and kind of one of the more forerunners within that industry. Mm-hmm. And then, so I had a lot of, you know, I spent a lot of time like in the physical gallery space just because of that. And then I had artists who mentored me from the community. And then my family, like my mom's side, had always collected art. And wow. So I had tons of art around me all the time.
So it was like you were given permission at a very early age to do something, you know what I mean? Where it might've been a little bit harder for somebody else who wasn't exposed to all that you were.
Right. And my mom, she, you know, started her own leather design business back in the day. And so she had a very artistic entrepreneurial side to her mm-hmm. that I think I definitely had, you know, got some of that. And I think she was very much about, you know, following your dreams and your heart, mm. Which I really appreciate. And my parents really did help foster that by like getting me materials and making sure that, you know, I was quite privileged to have a lot of early on exposure. Mm-hmm. And even my aunt in Washington, D.C. was like working for the National Gallery. Like I have a lot. And my other two, she was my great aunt. And then my other two aunts, one's a writer and one's an artist. So yeah, I feel like I've had a lot of support, and the Santa Fe community definitely did that. And then when I was, in my late teens, because I didn't start actually painting specifically because I didn't want to, until later on, like in my late teens, because I really felt like drawing is fundamental and I don't want to paint until I can just nail it with drawing. And wow. So I then was taken into a school that like a grad school that was opened, unfortunately didn't stay open. This Yale professor came out, an ex-Yale professor from their grad department, and opened up this school in Santa Fe. And as a teenager, I somehow was there. I don't even know how I got in. Like I look back and I'm like, how was I allowed to be part of this? And, you know, and sort of walking around and talking to all these grad students. And I'm like, you know, a teenager, but it was with him that I would say I got some of my best art education, just because he took no bullshit, and he was awesome. He was so tough love, and he'd just look at a work and he'd be like, you can do better than that. What's this? You were lazy here. And, wow. And for me, that voice has always been in my mind, like as I progressed through. So even though that was one little drop in time, his teaching and the way he taught me was really, really helpful and helped me grow really quickly.
Wow. When, obviously, maybe a little bit before that, when did your work start, you know, getting noticed? Or when did people say, wow, she's really got some talent. Let's try to kind of help her foster that.
I have no idea. You know, I would say, yeah, I mean, definitely when I was a teenager, I mean, I was already doing things, yeah, in terms of some little exhibitions and stuff in the community. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a hard one. And you know, so I'll tell you a little story if we have like a short amount of time, which is, when I moved here to Portland, where I am located now, I had been living all over. So really it was the first time that I consolidated everything I owned and actually opened crates and things like that from when I lived in Australia and you know, Germany and everywhere. And I brought a friend over, and he and I went through all of my work from the time I was probably 10 or even earlier up to present. Wow. And in that process, there were a few things that came to light. One is that thank God I was driven, because I thought I was a lot better than I was. So there was like there was this huge delusion piece for me that like I was pissed when I was in my 20s and going and knocking on literally every gallery door in New York. Why aren't they taking my work? And I was mad. But now I look back and I'm like, thank the Lord that they didn't take my work, because it would have done a disservice to me. It would have actually probably frozen me in time in a place where my growth and development was still really immature and not there yet. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I'm mature now, but I'm definitely a lot more in my element now than I was then. Mm-hmm. And in that time span too, my friend and I actually ended up, I know this is, some people just shudder at this, but I threw away 1,200 pounds of art.
Oh my God.
And I literally painted over paintings and destroyed them because I didn't want people to resurrect them out of the garbage bin. And like, they were works that I didn't want to represent me. And I still probably have some 4x5, you know, slides or something of them. But for me, it was A, really cathartic. And B, I still have tons of art. I probably have 4,000 pounds of art still, right? But I just didn't, there were works that like I thought, and I was like, you know, if I had a retrospective one day, I wouldn't want these works there. And I, you know, and I consulted my dad about it too, you know, he's like the art lawyer dude. And he was the one who's like, you better, if you're going to throw away stuff, you better like really destroy it if you don't want people to like find the Tanmaya Bingham someday.
Wow. Was there any hesitancy at all? Or were you just kind of like, this needs to be done?
Sure, it was like a little scary for sure. Because I was like,
the hours and sweat and tears that you put into that.
Right. But you know, it was also so, so liberating. Because it felt like this dead weight that, you know, I've been carrying around for years and years, that like, and old stories. Cause you know, you unwrap every artwork, and especially because I do figurative work, there's people involved, right? So every single person, I'm like looking and I'm like, oh, I remember X, Y, and Z. And you know, everything triggers memory. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like it was really cathartic. And yeah.
That must've taken a long time.
It was a process, let's just say.
Oh my gosh. So you painted over some of the canvases and reused them. What'd you do?
No, I didn't reuse them.
Okay.
No.
You just kind of like,
I can't, the way I work, it's not an option. So, so I literally just like
went Jackson Pollock on them.
painted over them with like black paint, and then actually broke them. Broke the panels, so they just crushed down. And then I had some old canvases, so I ripped those up after we painted over them with like rollers of paint. It was really fun. I mean, it was kind of fun. It's like throwing dishes against a wall or something, you know.
Well, right. And I guess if you look at it, it's kind of like that was part of your growth process and part of your learning, you know what I mean, to get to where you're at now. And so I don't know, but
Yeah. I mean, and now like, you know, in conjunction with like actually how I work, you know, I work on a whole series at once. So I do like 6 or 7 panels or whatever at one time. And for me, it's very systematic in some ways. Cause like, I know, okay, faces take me 3 hours and this takes me 2 and this takes me this. And so I basically break down like my timeline before I even start. And then I always have like a 2-week buffer, which I like leave for like the unexpected stuff. But I go into a series with a vision, which I don't even know where it comes from. I literally just get like a download of like one series at a time. And I'm like, okay, I don't understand this. I don't like need to, I'll just do it. Mm-hmm. And so, I'm never one to throw away or have like excess. So like, I don't think, knock on wood, in all of my time that I can reflect on, I've ever even been like put out 5 panels and only used 4 because I messed up one. Like, I don't see I've ever messed up. Like for me, anything that happens, especially the way I work, I'm like, oh, Well, that's going to turn into like a weird fucked up animal, excuse my language. So it just kind of like transpires into something else. So I try to utilize a lot, I guess.
You're good at pivoting.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. I mean, you're a conduit, you know, and I feel like that way for myself, like when I write and when things just pop in, it's like, oh my gosh, okay, this needs to come out, and we do our best to let it out. But
yeah, wow. I mean, I think the challenging piece is not to question, right? Mm-hmm. To me, the challenging piece is to be like, okay, I'm going to do this, even though this seems really weird. Like that's to me, the more challenging part. And granted, like I get a download in the beginning, but then there's all these little mini downloads that come along the way. So it's not, you know, just like paint by numbers or something like that, which, you know, I don't even do anyways, but
it's like, yeah, you get a starting point and then it kind of continues to evolve as you lay it out.
Right. Like it always turns out much better than I think. And I love that. Like, it's like life, you know, it always turns out much better than you kind of think it will. So it's really exciting.
And if we could just hold on to that and not like go through all the worry and all that, right? I mean, cause we all do.
Oh, I know.
Well, what does it mean to be an artist in the 21st century compared to maybe being one last century?
Oh, gosh. Many things. I think the responsibility has shifted from more of, let's say, the gallery to the artist itself, because, you know, now it's really up to the artist to do all their promotional, you know, put out all their promotions, deal with their social media, mm-hmm. kind of entice all their fan groups and all of this. Whereas prior to this, you know, artists really could be a lot more lazy. You know, you look at somebody like, for example, Francis Bacon, and, you know, obviously he's a, you know, more big time artist or whatever, but like he, you know, had his gallery would even bring him groceries. They pay him a stipend. They'd like archive his work for him. They would frame it. They would stretch it. They would do everything. Whereas now, like, all of that's on the artist, you know, of course your groceries, but like, you know, you're responsible for your archiving, your, you know, stretching of your canvases, all your material costs. Like, it's not the gallery's responsibility. And same with like a lot of the marketing. Sure, they do their own, but they really expect you now to do that, which I think is also why many people are starting to question the gallery model, because there are some things like it's still functioning the same and they're still taking a high percentage, but theoretically they're not necessarily doing as much.
Like, why not do it yourself and get all the money?
Right. Especially with a gallery that has like, if you have a lot of influence, the gallery wants that, right? Because it looks good for them too.
Sure.
And vice versa. Yeah, there's a fine line. I think it depends. That's starting to change, but you know, the galleries traditionally have been the gateway to getting into like museum collections and things like that. If your goal is just solely to sell, then don't even worry about a gallery. Just, you know, do your own promotion stuff. And then galleries, you know, have their own client base too. So that's something that is coveted by them, and that can be very helpful as well. Mm-hmm. It's kind of what you're paying for. It's like the mailing list, right? And hopefully they're doing more expansive things like going to art fairs and things like that, that will really help boost your career and also get more eyes on you.
No, that's really, I like how you explain that. You know, I'll see movies or I'll read, you know, in the past, a lot of painters, maybe in the 1800s, they had patrons, right? Mm-hmm. And now, is that just someone who kind of pays them enough money for them to live by? You know, I mean, that, like, yeah. When a painting's done though, what does that mean? It goes to the patron, or how does that work? Dirk, you know what I mean?
It strikes me that usually it has. I mean, I don't really know exactly. I mean, you look back at like Leonardo da Vinci, for example, and he had many. But normally he's like living somehow like on their compound, like if they're, you know, castle or living like on some property that they've like given to him. And then he's usually doing, while he's there, it's typical that he's doing work for them. Like commission work or a mural or various things, right? Not to say that he probably couldn't do other things, but I'm not sure, you know, if they think of that as, I'm not sure how it was handled in those days. It's kind of like having a job and then doing the same thing outside of your job and getting in trouble for it. That's not a good idea. So, yeah.
So like when you, so I know you do some commission work, correct?
Yeah, I do a lot of commission work for people.
So do you, like when you have, you know, an idea come through for a panel that you were talking about just a little bit ago, does that kind of take precedence and then you have an idea of where you want it to go, or is that just going to your website, or, you know, how do you juggle your, you know, intuitive downloads and the commission work?
Well, I mean, I see them as really separate, unless I'm doing a commission where somebody's like I have some clients who recently were like, we just want you to do a portrait of us, but whatever you want. Like they didn't give me any parameters. Whereas most of the time I'm doing work that might actually not even be my style. So I'll be doing, you know, just like animals or something really basic. And I actually love it because it gives me a break from like my own work, B, because I learn new things. Like it's not how I would normally, let's say, create. So it's like, okay, I'm forced to learn something new in this process, which ultimately I might then integrate back into my own process.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
Yeah. So I do commission work and then my own work is pretty separate from that. Like I don't really have much overlap unless they give me full license to do whatever I want. And even then, you know, I'm very conscientious having done so much commission work. There's usually some sort of agenda in there that I want to make the client happy. So I'm going to listen really hard to any little things that they sort of bring up. And, you know, I have clients too, who would be like, paint this bird, but, you know, do it in Tanmaya style, because of course, you know, best, but I really just want the bird. And I know this client like well enough to know that, no, they just want the bird. They don't want any frills and thrills with it. And that's important, you know, as a creative, to like know your customer really well.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So, and I've had a few where, you know, you end up doing some stuff over again a little bit, but not too much. Yeah. I think last year I did like 24 commissions.
Wow.
Yeah. It was a busy year. That's good. Which means that I'm now just like getting back into my studio space for me.
Okay.
More.
And you like to use people and animals a lot in your work, not just obviously the commission work, because that's probably going to be people and animals, but just like, what's the difference between a commission work person or animal compared to how you integrate it into your panels? And why do you like to use them?
Yeah. So for me, I'm like fascinated by people. I think, you know, people are the most interesting puzzle we have on this planet. And two, you know, my work has so much surreal, otherworldly flair to it that everyone needs a place to ground, you know, like, so if you look at my work and it was just sheerly, you know, otherworldly and super abstract, there wouldn't be some place where people could identify and connect. And so to me, that's really important. Also, I just love drawing people and hands and feet. And like, as a kid, I would stay up, like I'd finish my homework at like 10 and then I'd stay up till 3 a.m. in the morning, just practicing every night how to draw faces.
Wow. Wow.
I think I have some like disciplinary thing in my chart.
It's a lot of Virgo.
I don't know if it's Virgo. I have a lot of like Mars Leo energy, okay. I think. I mean, but you know, that comes back. Like my whole principle for creating is I see it as a series of good decisions executed through discipline and driven by passion. And that to me is like crucial. Like, it's not just that you're going to get there. You actually have to put in some, you know, elbow grease and go through the process.
I guess what I'm kind of trying to think of, it's like almost like a work ethic. I mean, not, I know all artists, you know, have a probably have a very strong work ethic, but it's almost like I'm listening to someone who isn't an artist who has, you know, like is, I don't know, creating something different in the way that you're approaching it.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's probably pretty apt. Like, I am incredibly systematic and I am very organized. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely approach it from, yeah, a very like a work ethic kind of mentality.
Almost assembly line-ish.
In a weird way, yeah, but no. Like, yeah. There's like, I can kind of toggle between realms. You know, when we talked about, for example, you know, people who have to be, you know, maybe they have some addictions or something that kind of help fuel, they think they help fuel their creative process. For me, mm-hmm. I mm-hmm. naturally just feel like I'm there. Like, mm-hmm. I just like, I can just slip into that like super otherworldly, goofy space pretty quickly. And yeah, so that's, and I'd have to say part of that. So I had dyslexia growing up really badly. And for me now, as an adult, like I still experience some of that. And I've realized that my world is just like, everything looks like pictures to me. So even like words don't look like words or individual letters, you know, making up a word, they're just pictures. Mm. And so it's, yeah, like everything for me is just this visual puzzle that I need to solve. And I find it great and fascinating. And, you know, no one comes into my studio ever. Mm-hmm. So that's like another thing that like, I think a lot of artists, their studio becomes like a thoroughfare for people because every, you know, like everybody wants to like be part of the artist world and see what's going on. And for me, it's like, no, this is my world.
Yeah.
And this is, and when I'm in that process, I'm hyper focused, so I could be probably an orangutan to be around. And then like B, the other thing is that I need to empower myself to solve problems and not rely on like a third party coming in and giving me a solution. And then when I finish a work, I'm so grateful, like I get feedback or whatever. And then I think, okay, how can I integrate that to the next? Mm. Rather than it happening like while I'm in that like incubator phase. It's, you know, it's like a mom carrying a child. You don't open up her belly and like start looking at the baby. Like it's, yeah, it's growing. And yeah, then when it comes out, then you see it. And so, you know, my ex-husband, partners, no one's ever been in my studio. So you can just imagine, like, it's sort of this weird mystery zone for a lot of people. And I'll tell you, it's pretty normal in there. But yeah, I mean, of course, when I finish work, then I invite people in, but not while I'm in the process of doing the work.
No, I totally get it. Yeah. When did you... I know you're, you know, you've done a lot of different work in different styles, but when did you kind of lock into what you're currently doing? You're, you know, the unique style right now of utilizing animals and people for the grounding effect in kind of an other worldly setting.
I don't know. I think I've always done sort of been in that vein. Mm-hmm. My, you know, oh, by the way, the animal thing is just because I think animals are cute. Like there's nothing to that really. And I also, yeah. So yeah, that my whole style is just, it's just what I do. And every series I do, as you know, is like completely different in terms mm-hmm. of the color palettes and things mm-hmm. of that nature.
But it still feels like a tan Maya Bingham.
It does. It does. I mean, that's important, but mm-hmm. I have no idea. I think it's just a personal evolution piece. I would say at least one key component in that development process would be my time in India, because I had been in Florence studying painting, and as you had said, and some art history. Mm-hmm. And then I had gone to India sort of via Nepal and some other areas. but I was at an ashram in India, and I actually was able to set up an art studio there. And I had huge canvases. I mean, 12-foot plus, right? And wow. And I approached it very differently. So I came from, you know, such a traditional drawing, you know, technical background. Mm-hmm. And so instead, when I was there, I used it as a kind of cathartic process, where each day I would have come to the canvas with a different emotional state that I was in, or something that I was, you know, whatever I was feeling. And I would just put that on the canvas without any sort of, you know, criticism, without looking at like, does this compositionally look right? Or, you know, all those things you mm-hmm. learn. It was kind mm-hmm. of an unraveling, I guess. And then I
would help free you up.
Yeah. And like a series of layers would transpire as a result of that, you know, of different kind of states of whatever I was. Mm. And so I think that was really key within my process. And then the other thing was, when I got back from India, I actually went, because I was living in New York, I went and saw this professor of mine from New Mexico. And because he moved back to New York, and I was showing him some of the work I did in India, and he looked at it and he goes, "Why are you doing this? You can draw, Tanmaya, you can do faces." and it was this moment for me of, oh, I gotta like actually, you know, figure out how I'm gonna bring these two worlds together. And for me, the abstract work is very much heart-based, and some people it would be different for, and they would argue that, but for me, it's that. And then the more technical stuff is very, you know, cerebral. And so bringing those two together felt like a really good balance to me, where I could kind of be in that free flow heart space and also have my mind engaged. And that's basically how I kind of, at least more, I guess, intellectually got to that place, and sort of fluidly, mm-hmm. but it took, I mean, it's still in process. Who knows? Maybe next year I'll start doing a dance or something. I don't know.
You'll know when you know.
Yeah. I mean, it just comes like it's not something to force.
Mm-hmm. Your work has garnered a lot of awards. I think recently you were a finalist in the Bennett Prize. Mm-hmm. As well as a first place in the San Diego Museum of Art Artist Guild Summer Exhibition.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah. What does that mean to you?
You know, I sort of giggle at it too, because, you know, as you like go along in your career path and you just, you know, you're entering stuff, and sometimes it's refreshing, because you're like, oh, finally something happened, right? Like
validation.
Yeah, it's validating. And then sometimes discouraging, because then you like see things where you're like, wait, why did that person win? They haven't done art very long at all, but that's okay. We'll just keep going, you know. So it's a very weird, I think of the art world as the Wild West. You know, there's no you can go from zero to hero, or hero to zero, or and back again. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean, these things are validating. It's really nice to also just be able to, you know, my goal is just to share work, right? And so mm-hmm. it just, to me, it creates more conduits to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to look at it. What does creativity mean to you? hot seat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny, because it's like the name of your podcast.
the creative spark. You're getting the spark right now. I know.
It's funny. So because I am a creative, mm-hmm. I never think I'm a creative, because it's just so natural to me. So it's not, it would probably be easier for somebody else coming in looking from the outside to define. Because I don't even think of it as this flow process, which is interesting. I see it as like you get an inspiration, And then that's like 10% of the whole entire process. The rest is just doing the, like 90% is just doing the work. I don't know.
That's all right.
No, it's such a good question, because I think that it's something that is really glorified in our society as being like so special or something everybody needs to like have, right, and hear the steps to get there.
Tap into, like, your creativity. And
right. And I'm like, bullshit. There's not like a 1, 2, 3 for this. Like, it's really just like figuring out what your inner essence is and sharing that and trying to do it in the most authentic way. And that can obviously, that changes for everybody. And I think the one piece which would, you know, somebody might put in that 1, 2, 3 would be, you know, how to get away from all of the noise so that you can listen. And that's really it. We get so distracted.
Especially nowadays, right?
Oh yeah. I'm awful at it too. I mean, we all do.
You're not the only one. I mean, you know, and let me just say, I mean, based on what you've already just shared with us as far as your routine and your healthy habits, I mean, you're probably way ahead of the game as far as being, you know, distracted and not being distracted, I should say. So
yeah, I am, except for I have my own, even in studio, and I know a lot of other creators can relate to this. You know, you're supposed to be like focusing on something and you get like locked into listening to something that kind of, you know, might be diluting your energy. And other times I would argue it's not, because sometimes I'm doing like such repetitive tasks. I need something to make that task seem sustainable. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah.
No, I get it. What, where does your motivation come from? Is it just, I mean, obviously you still get up every day really enjoying doing what you're doing, it seems like.
Yeah. I have no idea. It just is like vision and drive. And it just, I mean, it feels so strong to me that I don't feel like I ever have had a choice, which mm-hmm. for better or for worse, you know, sometimes it really sucks. Sometimes I just want to feel like that I don't have this thing eating at me that I have to do, that I could go out with friends and feel okay. Mm-hmm. Whereas it's this huge responsibility I sense for myself that I need to just do. And if I don't do it, it eats at me. So
I can relate.
Yeah. It's, so where it comes from, I don't know. And I've never really tried to figure it out. In fact, it sort of comes back to sometimes when people ask me about my work and they're like, why did you decide to put, you know, make her arm turn into a ferret? And I'm like, I don't know, whatever you want to bring to it, that's fine for me, because you're the viewer. So that's really what matters, is that it means something to you. I'm not going to give you a big synopsis on the work. I'm just going to do what I get and what I feel.
The rest up to everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I think as artists and creatives, you know, writers, you name it, sometimes they don't see the payoff to their work for many years or ever at all. Have you ever thought about kind of calling it quits, you know, during your journey as an artist?
Absolutely. In fact, you know, it's one of the hardest things as a creator that we come up against is ourselves and our self-doubt, right? You know, I have years where nothing's happened and I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, why do I kill myself in my studio, sacrifice connections with people, right? Because like I have limited time. So I'm like having to always make choices between, do I hang out with these people or am I going to be in my studio? And I think, you know, I question then, it's like, why am I doing this? This is silly. Like, I'm putting all this energy into something that's like an inanimate object, right? Like, However, I think at the end of it, you know, you always have, I've always at least come back to like my beacon of like, you know, really, why am I doing this? And that is, you know, not only do I want to be able to share, you know, art and creativity with others, but also it really makes me happy. I love being in the studio. I love doing the work. So I like having, as much as I hate it sometimes, I actually like having something I'm always driving for and striving towards. Mm-hmm.
When you're finished, are you able to kind of sit there and kind of pat yourself on the back and take it in? Or do you kind of think like, what's next?
Oh, I'm already thinking what's next. Okay. I've already like planned my next one. Because I need to, you know, I have my personal goals every year of like what I want to get done. I've spent so long with it. I don't want to see it anymore.
Just like sit there for a little bit and like in a comfortable chair and just like stare at it and just kind of, just, I don't know, you know
okay.
what I mean? Just
let me paint the landscape of my studio.
Okay.
There's only a chair to sit on that is hard with like, I use like a wheelchair cushion on when I'm actually painting or working. Everything else in my studio, like my supplies are literally in one little like IKEA rolly cart, and I don't have anything else in there.
Go get a beanbag.
It's like, it's super simple. If I was going to have anything in my studio, the only thing I would have would be a cot to sleep on because I love naps. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like I don't want to sit back and just like reflect, because if I do that all the time, I'm not going to get anything done.
I guess not necessarily reflect, you know, just because it's done, you know, but I mean, just allow yourself just to kind of a little moment of just like, what's the word we're thinking of here? You know, just
like drink it in.
Self-love. I mean, just, you know, just, yeah, just a,
Oh, I felt the love the whole entire time.
Good. All
right. It's just like,
you're not a tortured artist.
No, it's just like when I finish, I'm like, I'm ready to be done. Like this is, I'm done. And I'm like, I hope this lands in a really beautiful home or organization space. Cause like, I'm ready.
Yeah, that's perfectly acceptable.
But I think you're coming back to the kind of cliche artist.
Who has the
old sofas and seats in their studio that they lounge on and they just ponder over their work all day. I'm not that way. Like I don't, half the time I'd have to say, like, I sometimes don't even like the work I do. I just do it because I'm supposed to do it. I just love the process. And I'm like, this is what I've been asked to do, for better or for worse.
Well, you know, you said something that I think is important to reiterate. You enjoy the process. A lot of times, for a while there, when I was creating stuff, books, what have you, I did enjoy the process, but yet I was hoping that the finished product would do things for me. And my expectations were a little, you know, out of skew. And so the key is the journey, right? And so you are enjoying your journey. And so that's really fantastic.
Well, I mean, I think so to piggyback on what you just said, I too used to get these like really grandiose ideas, like, oh, I finished this and it will land in this museum or blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And now I'm sure I have some, you know, objectives or some hopes and dreams around that. However, I realize like I'm not in it just for that, right? Like and to actually release myself from that need, I think opens up a lot more freedom to actually work without something of thinking that, oh, it has to be for X. Instead, it's like, oh, I can do whatever I want to with this.
Yes.
And if people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. And that's okay.
And I like that, because like when you were talking earlier, how some people let people into their studio while they're working on something, that's a really easy way to get muddled and to, you know what I mean? To kind of let your piece kind of get sabotaged for a variety of reasons. And, but you don't allow that.
I don't know.
And that's good.
And granted, I mean, and it's hard. I have to say, like, keeping that right now, I have this like curtain, which is so funny. So like, if I have friends over, you know, it's like behind the curtain, I feel like some Wizard of Oz thing. Right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's hard for me. And I've even questioned, like, should I keep this boundary? And I'm like, yeah, it's actually served me really well. And it becomes my sacred space too. Mm-hmm. Which
it's
I think
a form of meditation probably for you, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's really important, I think, to have that space to rejuvenate and to like restore and to look and reflect. Mm-hmm. You know, and too, when people are like in galleries and showing on that level, sometimes the gallery really tries to influence what you're doing. They'll tell you like, oh, this work was great and they want more of that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a tough game to play, because people can tell when they look at a work if the artist isn't totally engaged in it anymore. And it's a disservice to yourself as the artist and the creator, because, man, if you're going to put in all those hours, at least have your heart involved. That's right. A lot of like blood, sweat, and tears for nothing.
Right.
And if you want just to do, you know, quick turnaround work, then that's fine. You know, that's, we all do that. But
yeah.
I mean, I've had galleries, at least one where, you know, they really wanted me to sort of shift. And I just told them, I was like, I can't be anything that I'm not. Like, so if that's not going to work for you, then, you know, obviously our relationship will just segue, yeah. We'll go different ways. So yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, you have to have, I mean, as an artist, I think you just have to have like a lot of confidence in your own practice and your own abilities and that competence and confidence piece is huge and key.
Absolutely. We're kind of winding down.
Sure.
What suggestions do you have for, you know, young artists? Anything?
Ooh. Oh, so many.
I know, right?
Well, I mean, it's
a whole other show.
Well, yeah. You know, I like teach art business sometimes too. And I my caveat with that is like, I want to make sure that you guys don't have to make all the mistakes I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think like first, you know, artists sometimes get like new artists get so caught up in this idea that they have to know their style and have to have this way of creating. And it's like, no, just create, just produce and just keep producing and keep producing consistently. And you will come into that space and then it will become your style. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than it being this like forced process. And I mean, there's so many things from like a business stance that I would definitely tell artists to do differently,
mm-hmm.
but that's like a whole nother,
sure.
thing. I mean, and to take care of their health. I mean, I think that's, to me, that's like so key. I see so many creatives who stop taking care of themselves and, yeah. And I think that's not, I don't think that's healthy. I think you need to take care of yourself and understand that, yeah, it is work. And there are times where it is going to be work and that's part of the process. Yeah.
No, those are all great.
Yeah. I don't know. Just like, I just think you have to like, you also have to enjoy it. Right. Like that's, yeah. I mean, that's key. It's so key.
Love it. So what's next? What are you working on now?
So I have been working on probably for most of this year because of commissions, as I expressed before, a series, my new series, and they are six large panels that are, gosh, I think like 4 feet by 6 foot are four of them. And the others are, six by five footers.
Wow.
And this work is actually sort of linking back to some of my 2020 COVID rainbow work, which is really different for me. So I've never done any sort of political based work at all. Mm-hmm. But this work is is still in that same vein, but different, because I think we're in a place now where there's so many, obviously, sort of conflicting views of what's happening right now in our world and our economic system and everything and our political mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. And I just want to sort of show the landscape, but really I'm equally as confused. And so mm-hmm. I'm bringing some of that otherworldly weird element into it because I feel like it really needs it. I think we've become way too polarized, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I want to speak to that piece. And I also, the work specifically, I've chosen only to feature females in it or people who identify there as well. Because I just, mainly because of the times we're in right now too, no offense to you males. It's more, it's just something that I feel really strongly about, especially too, just given the fact that in the art world, women artists are so underrepresented still. You can get going to an art school, let's say 10% are male and the rest are female. Out of those, only the 10% male will be the ones in the galleries, and the females will be the ones probably working at the galleries. Wow. So, it's just, and most of the galleries, the majority of artists represented are male. So I just, I wanted to kind of bring light to that. But I'm more of a spiritual political person. So I'm more of like a feeler than mm-hmm. I am a thinker about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's what the series is. There'll probably be some glitter still in it. I'm not going to use as much as I did last time. That was really tough. I had to make my own glitter colors because I needed so much.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm not going to do, I'm going to have smaller, more key amounts of glitter, just little amounts. So that's it.
Well, I look forward to seeing that.
Sounds good.
So folks can find you on your website at Tan Maya Bingham. It's TanMayaBingham. And you can see a lot of her work, some of her commission work, some of her panel work. You can read up and learn a whole lot more about her than we've kind of already discussed here, but it's a wonderful website.
And people can join my mailing list too and get nice little VIP things. I honestly only send emails when I have things to say. So I try not to overwhelm my subscribers as well with that.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh my God. Thank you so much. That was so much fun. Rare you get time to talk about your process.
I find it fascinating. And there's a lot of similarities between, different creative fields, and there's some differences too. So it's been very interesting kind of fleshing those out. So thanks again.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Creative Spark. To learn more about host G. Brian Benson, his latest best-selling book, Habits for Success, and this week's amazing guest, please visit the show notes. And we love building community, making new friends, and spreading the goodness. So don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and share it with your friends and family. Until next time, as Brian always says, be well, be creative, and always be yourself.